Blog Talk Radio.
Are you hearing that okay?
Lovely.
Sounds great.
We are.
Oh.
Wake up, my friends. What happens now depends on your state of mind. 'Cause we have been deceived, and we gotta believe. Open up your eyes, you've been blind. Your freedoms have been taken from you, but in your heart you know what is true. Our rights have been undermined. Their statute laws and all their acts, they don't apply if we don't contract. So stop paying all of their fines. And love will set you free. Love will set us free. Love will set you free. 'Cause they can't manipulate peace and harmony. Bill Hicks said it's just a choice between love and fear. You gotta find your voice and shout it loud through a megaphone. And don't let them vaccinate you, and don't let them manipulate you. But violence I don't condone. This is a spiritual revolution. It's all part of our evolution, but our fate is still unknown. So wake up, my friends. The future now depends on you. So lead us home. And love will set you free. Love will set us free. Love will set you free. 'Cause they can't manipulate peace and harmony.
Hi, and welcome to the Universal Awareness Radio Show. My name's Linda Jocelyn, and I'm your host for today's show. And welcome back into the chat room, too. It feels all a bit odd because, as you all know, some of you know in the chat room, I've actually been offline for 10 days. So I don't actually feel up to date on what's going on the internet, just up to date on what's going on in life, really, which it's all a bit weird when you have spent a lot of time on the internet and you then get cut off for 10 days. And certainly I was getting withdrawal symptoms of not knowing what was going on the level of information. But it's been an interesting experiment, not one that I chose, but one that happened because of moving house. And I'm now living like with a view from most of my windows of like a Constable impressionist painting, really, because it doesn't matter whether I'm going to bed, getting up in the morning, having a shower or cooking in the kitchen. I actually have a view of amazing lush green countryside with willow trees and lots of other trees, because I'm sort of on a slope. So I'm up the top of the slope, and then it's going down to the river. And there's swans that just happen to breed and mate down virtually the bottom of my garden. I mean, they aren't actually, you know, in the bottom of the garden. But when you look at the view, because of the kind of scope of the landscape on the slope going down, it looks like they are actually bedded in my garden. So I have a view of cows and people canoeing up the river and swans, which is so completely different for me. It's almost surreal whenever I look out the window. Actually having a shower and looking out of the window is like, oh my God. It's very strange. But anyway, it's one rather wonderful. And as most of you know, who have been on the show quite regularly, I was actually putting out intentions of things I needed. And it's quite interesting because I did get them all. I don't think there's any that I didn't get. And this was just a house that came up. I only viewed two houses, and the other one was on the same day as this one. But I knew that the right house would come up and that I would then view it. And then this one was tagged, the other one was tagged on the end, which was a no-goer. But it's amazing how that works. A lot of people say that doesn't work. You just have to hold that vision and you have to live that vision with inside of you, which is exactly what I did, really, is that I wasn't going to take any less. I wasn't going to move again, like twice in a year, which is what I have done. moved twice completely and I have a lot of stuff because I have a load of vintage clothes stock that I sell as well, and a lot of books which take a long time to pack up and carry in. But it's been quite interesting because I wanted the fires, the open fires, so that whatever happens to the fuel situation, I'm going to be able to light fires. And I have a three-story house here that I'm renting, and there's an open fire on each floor. One down in the basement actually has you could put pots and pans on it to heat food as well. And it's very interesting because this is what you need to do. You need to really get a vision of what you want. And I think that I couldn't have dreamed this big enough, really, because it's perfect in every way. And I was down about halfway down my 232-foot garden, and there was a man out there hanging his washing out, and he introduced himself, and it was funny because the other guy who was immediately next to me was in the garden as well, and he was asking me why I came here and saying he loved it, and I told him about my vision and intent. And the list of the things that I'd asked for, like a garden that I could grow veg in and a linen line because I didn't have anywhere to dry my washing, and I love drying my washing outside. And it was really interesting because the old boy next door shouted out, "Yeah, but you must have had a man with a barrow on there," because he's actually loaned me his wheelbarrow to load lots of my stuff in from the car and down the alleyway by the houses. And it was so funny because he actually included himself in my vision and said, "You must have put a man with a barrow." And actually, he's very handy. He's already been knocking up my raised bed wood pieces that I bought and took all down the garden and was quite prepared to do myself. And while I was indoors, he'd knocked two of them up for me. So I've definitely had added pieces on in this scenario as well. So it's pretty amazing. But I haven't been on air, so you lot will know a lot more about what's going on than I do in that way. What I would say is today I've had a chance to have a look at some of the stuff on the network, and our network that backs up the show is www.universallyaware.ning.com. And there was a great video, I think Katmar put up, of Greg Braden, and we've got a lot of Greg Braden videos on the network, but this one was Sacred Knowledge of Vibration. That's really well worth looking at to understand and comprehend who you really are and what we are, really, because yes, there's a lot of political, financial, and all sorts of stuff going on, warring stuff going on out there, but what we are is something else, and that's where I always come back to, and that's a great video. Having seen that one, I then put another video up of the one I hadn't seen before of Greg Braden, and this was the seven essence mirrors, the seven Essene mirrors. And you know, Greg Braden is somebody who has been around the world into all the secret places where a lot of old manuscripts are hidden. He's been into Tibet a few times, I believe, and he has a sort of rapport with monks there who have shown him stuff that nobody else has been shown. And I myself have a great affinity with the Essene community, and have always related to a lot of the information that has been channeled through from the Essene community and on the Essenes, and also historic information. And I have lots of books on the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were manuscripts and works that came out, and the wisdoms that came out of the Qumran Essene community, which was just on the edge of the Nile in the desert. And Qumran is the name of the community there, and the space that you can still go and visit, although there's nothing there. But when they were either being raided, I can't remember what actually happened to the end of that community, but this is at the time probably just before AD. This is probably the first century, because it is said that, and I totally feel this is right, that that is where the man, the Nazarene, the Jesus figure that in a lot of religions, but to me he's the Nazarene, and where he learned his knowledge to go out there and teach others was from the Essene community. And until he was 30, he lived in the community there with the Essenes, and that actually Mary and Joseph, historical characters, I'm not relating this to the Christian religion at all, were actually in that community as well. The Dead Sea Scrolls were stuff that came out after that community ended and were found all those years later. And the great hoard of Essene scrolls were found in 1948, the year that I was born. I always find that quite interesting. I think there's landmarks. There's reasons we choose to incarnate at the times we incarnate. And I have a great affinity. I have kind of past life remembrance of being one of the traveling Essenes. I certainly wasn't anybody of any note, but I do have memories back then. And when I researched what I saw myself doing and the certain color headband that I wore, because they wore headbands to classify what roles they were in. And when I researched that, I discovered that the headband I had seen myself in was that of a traveler. So I would have been learning there as a traveler and then moving on and teaching others. A bit like the life I've had so far, actually, because I have moved around quite a lot and do seem to be receiving people who want to have more information. And that's the reason I do the life readings that I still do after all these years. I've been doing those for over 30 years now. But it's very interesting because Greg Braden's actually got and I thought I'd seen all his videos, actually, because I really do like where he's coming from on the science side. I love the science side of it, the quantum level of it, the vibrational level of it, but also in that he comes from the shamanic side of having a ancestry, I believe, in the American Native Indian. But he's doing the seven Essene mirrors, and it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating on the learning about our lessons here and how people around us, like our mother and father, and what they really are. And I do a lot of that work myself with people and getting them in the end to be able to say, thank you, you are the perfect parents for me. And I did have the perfect childhood. And it's very hard for a lot of people to say that until they've done the work, until they actually see and connect with their greater selves. And then can look at why they chose those parents. But he's certainly including some of that in it. I got a chance to listen to just over an hour of it. It was actually 2 hours, but I've only virtually been online a few hours, so I didn't get a chance to listen to the second hour. But if it's as good as the first, it's well worth looking at. And it's actually just called the Seven Essene Mirrors. And that's where it comes from. It comes from that community where that wise man, that man who taught many people, in the historic Nazarene stories. And the other video that I was going to mention was an interesting one from Foster Gamble from the Thrive Movement, and who did the Thrive DVD, which I think is very good. A lot of people out there are saying, well, he's Foster Gamble, he's inherited all the wealth, and he's, this can't be, you know, good. He's doing this, he's doing that. And there's been so much criticism of it. And if you listen to this latest video, what it's on, and it's on our network, it's called Taxpayers Strike It Rich, right? And if you listen to that and you let go of any belief systems you have and just go by the resonance of the man and the resonance of what is going on, you're going to figure out, I think, that this guy is learning on the hoof. You know, he did do that amazing video, but he hasn't got all the information, like none of us. You know, none of us have got all the information. When that curtain truly goes back, then we will have all the information. You know, as we arise in our consciousness and become who we truly are with no turning back at the end of this cycle, then we can truthfully say that we know the whole story, right? But none of us know the whole story. And I just want to support this guy in that when you listen to this, you can hear him. He's talking about information he's gathered. And through the Thrive site, there's been about 134 different groups, I think mostly across the US, that have been formed. And they're feeding him information. And because of that, he's now learning about how the economic system really works. I mean, he's got a lot of it on the Thrive video, and a lot of exposés there. But he didn't know it all. And I think that's why people, criticize him and call him, oh, he's just a stooge for the elite and all of this. But it isn't so. Most of the people who are out there are not stooges for the elite. They're not COINTELPRO. That very overused phrase. All they are people with some of the information. And if people can come from their hearts more and resonate and connect with these people, then have compassion. Because, you need to have compassion for yourselves that you don't have all the information either. None of us do. And when we can do that and not feel afraid about that and actually just agree to be on that path that we're on and we're learning every day and we're open to learning, then we can take, allow into our confidence, if you like, into our patch of the community. People like Foster Gamble, who, yes, he did inherit all that money, but he was not one of the people who went out and took the normal path. He's actually, from what I see of his history, all his life, he's been working on looking for solutions and for change. So that's well worth a look to see where he's going with that, and also visiting his Thrive network to see what they're actually doing there, because it's all part of the solution, and that's so, so important. I haven't heard about what's happened to Roger Hayes and whether he's actually out of prison. Maybe somebody can fill me in on that. When I was on air last on the 6th of July, no, it's probably the 5th of July because I moved the 6th, on the 5th, then I was still updating on what we were hearing there, that he was possibly in prison for 3 weeks, somebody had heard. But I certainly haven't got any updates on that. That was not a pleasant experience there going on. And they obviously found a reason to lock him up. Now, I was just going to address, what I'm going to address here, it's just a little bit, is a conversation that's been going on the network in the last couple of days, I believe. And this is something from Mel, who's on our network, who's also in the chat room, I believe. And she put this great letter up and showed us a copy of a letter that she was sending to the water company from her heart, telling them the truth about the water and the water belongs to the people, and that in no way is it lawful for them to charge her for the water. And she, from what I know of Mel, she's been somebody who's not paid for water for years. So she stands with her truth. She's not only speaking the truth, she... she walks her talk, and it's very a great letter that she wrote there. And I know that Katmar backed her up with the information that she'd put out there and said what a great letter it was, and that obviously it was the truth. And then we had another person on the network come in and actually start saying that, to him... He doesn't think, I mean, Clive actually gave Mel some links to videos of people who know more about the fact that we are sovereign and blah, blah, blah. The birth certificate thing, the fact that our birth certificates are floated on the stock market, and that there is a trust made in our name, and that we are not the name, and that we are not, at the moment, beneficiaries in their legal sense to that trust, but that we were floated on the stock market in order to get them out of the bankruptcy. We are the collateral. That is why the census is done. Katmar didn't go into all these details, but he was pointing Mel towards some videos. And this is all true stuff. I mean, I've checked up an awful lot of this, and I've had a lot of experiences concerning this information. And what we got was a letter back. A comment back from somebody on the network, Paul, who was saying, I'll read you his reply because it's quite interesting, because people are very cynical and they're still very much in fear. And I hope he doesn't mind. I mean, he put it on the network for all to see. And I think this is worth discussing on here tonight. And this is about, he said, always happy to share with my fellow seekers, but let's establish a few ground rules. First and foremost, understand that we are of the same mind, just not on the same page. So please spare me any lectures about freedom and taking our power back. I have a firm grasp on what is at stake. My remark was not intended to be cryptic, nor was it said from a place of ego. He was certainly condemning them. I didn't copy the first reply, but he was certainly saying that it was misinformation and that Clive said he's dangerous. And he was meaning, yes, I think Mel called him an angel, and Clive said, no, I'm not really an angel, but I'm a bit dangerous. And dangerous, he was meaning, tongue-in-cheek, as he is dangerous to the elite and the false system. And what actually Paul said, if I remember rightly, was that Katmar is a danger to the public and himself. And I just feel this needs addressing, and this is his this is his reply after they picked him up on that. My remark was not intended to be cryptic, nor was it said from a place of ego. I'm certainly no expert, as I'm reading and researching, just as many people are these days, about the abomination that passes for law. That said, it was my intention to provoke this conversation, to hopefully encourage, hopefully Paul is online. I did put a note to say I was going to discuss this. And maybe he'll come on and he can phone in, and I'll certainly have him online and have a discussion with him. Here, he's saying, that said, it was my intention to provoke the conversation, to take pause and reflect on your, hopefully encourage you to take pause and reflect on your actions before rushing headlong into a situation armed with bits and pieces of information, in brackets, disinformation, no matter how well-meaning it may be, and making a bad situation far worse. So this is pretty heavy stuff here that he's put in. And as I said, Mel is somebody who's actually successfully not paid for water for a long time. So we know that she knows, you know, how to work this system, because that's what you have to learn how to do. Even people with a lot of knowledge are being sent to prison, and please don't try and fob me off with glib remarks like they can't build a prison big enough to hold us all. Take a look around you. They already did. Well, they haven't. There is no, that is a very glib remark there of yours, Paul, because there is no prison that could hold all of the population of the UK. And the more people we wake up, the more we're getting towards that point where they just cannot put all the people in prison. They have a real shortage right now. I mean, having put in prison 1,026, I think it was, from the so-called riots last year, they're going to be pretty, it'll be pretty difficult for them to put everybody in prison. The more people we wake up, and the other thing about this, Paul, if you're listening, is they don't put people in prison for very many of these legal things. They can't. If it's down to somebody causing violence, that's completely different, and that would be criminal damage and et cetera, et cetera. But the legal civic side is completely different, and you very rarely get taken to court. You're asked to go to court, and you're a fool if you go. That's how people get sent to prison. Just do not ever appear in court. And I learned that from TNS, is it TNS Radio? Yeah, the Scottish guys. Who used to laugh and they at me when I was doing things, and I was also still connecting it up with the legal side of going to court, and I learned through a lot of they're not easy to deal with, those Scottish guys on TNS. They're very sarky and they don't like women in particular. There's a lot of Irish and Scottish guys on there. I don't know what it is about the Irish and Scottish, but if there's a woman in her power, they have a real problem with that. But I did along the way learn and remain sovereign in their company. The times I was on, I even phoned in on their show and got information from them. But going to court is not, you only ever go to court if you really have to, and I certainly would not now. Unless there was a real, real, real big reason to do so. Because you're very rarely made through civil incidences to go to court. Right, so he's saying, take a look around you. They already did build the prison. That they didn't. There isn't one. I won't be goaded into offering up a detailed article, neither do I think you obtuse. It's not for me to educate you. You must be your own teacher, and therein sits the problem. Everyone wants a shortcut, a template letter, a pithy one-liner, one that will floor the magistrates and send shockwaves around the court, insider knowledge, the proverbial magic bullet. Now, I'm gonna give you information, Paul, that will take you way beyond that on what's happened to me in courts and with letters, all sorts of things. If you do not know who you are and unable to, I think he's got the, that's a bit, I think there's a mistake in that sentence. If you do not know who you are and are, I think he means unable to establish your competence before the law, you have no standing and you have already lost. Christ alone knows how bloody difficult it is to obtain remedy from these bastards once you have established your standing with a degree of competence. To make matters worse, many of them are ignorant of their own system. Paul, you're very angry about this, and I think I love the fact that you're even involved with it and that you're trying to learn and doing stuff. But if you take out that anger and start to really know who you are, then you'll get further with what you're doing and you won't have this angst. And I'll explain why in a moment. A certificate is a memorandum, an acknowledgement, a receipt that something has been registered into their system. That is it. So using words like evidence is just plain wrong. It's sheer bloody lunacy to point someone to a video or even a bunch of videos and make unqualified remarks like he knows what he's talking about. How do you know that? It's your opinion. But on the basis that you have already misled readers with what little information you have given, and what makes you qualified to offer up such an opinion? And I think our qualification is that we're all involved, and I certainly have been involved with this stuff. I've been involved with researching courts and all sorts of things like that. I'm trying to think how long it is now. It's 8, 9, 10 years, really, because I went in blind to litigate for myself for 2 years in a court to save my business and my house from me being evicted from both, and without any knowledge, and learnt along the way everything I needed to know, because I did everything wrong. But on the last day, I didn't. And I'll go into a little bit explanation of that. And after that, I then, by synchronicity and by the intent of needing to know how the courts really worked, then the people were placed in front of me who had all the information. And the first man I read and listened to all his audios was Winston Shrout. And he definitely is the master of the bunch, the Canadian guy who actually started all this and is also dealing with the court case that's going on between Keenan and whoever else it is in the States. He is the advisor for them as well. He's put here the last bit here. Perhaps you can begin to fathom why your words may seem as dangerous. Look, I know my comments will mostly likely push all of your buttons. Really not my intention, but we're all up against it right now. At least most of us are. And we all want answers fast. We all want remedy. I get that. However, if we are not prepared to go the distance with our research, and I'm not talking about sitting exams for the bar, but if not, then we will always be a day late and a dollar short and wind up in prison. The system, such as it is, broken in brackets, is theirs. And if people will insist in trying to take random bits of info from the web without gaining even a rudimentary grounding, will only end in tears. What I'm going to say is here, Paul, you've got one side of it. What you're doing is you're looking at a hologrammic or holographic situation, and you're looking at it one-sided, with one flat area. It's like being in a fifth dimensional world, right? And only looking from one dimension. And that's what that comment, that long comment that I've just read out, sounds like to me. Because what I know is that there is so much more connected with this, because every intention you have, you see, everything matters and everything works. Every thought, every intention, every word you speak is part of the equation that you put out there into that world. And a lot of people like Paul in the Freeman movement, in the sovereign movement, who are trying to go the legal route and call on common law, a lot of them are not pulling on the other areas. They're doing it in a very much 1D, 2D, maybe even a little bit 3D, but not really. It's all very 2D to me. They're using language. They're trying to get into the system. And he, as he says, that some people have little bits of information and that's not enough. But there's another whole area to this. This is holographic, okay? And what that means is that there is so many more resonances, frequencies to this equation. You cannot go into this 3D and win. You have to use and be all that you are to do it. And I know that synchronicities and all the frequency side of this and the intention that you have works, and it works anywhere. Okay, so it's all to do with where your frequency is and things like that. And that's where people win out with this. And I've certainly been somebody, and I've talked about this many times. I'm going to very quickly talk about this just for the fact that this is how it worked for me. Having been litigating for myself for 2 years on a wing and a prayer, knowing nothing, but getting through on total mistakes that they had made in their paperwork. That was the only thing I could go for in the beginning. That's what the first judge kind of winked at me and said, I'm letting you through, Linda, because I found a huge mistake on the first paperwork that was given to me on the eviction. And I was allowed to go through. Now, two legal people, one a guy who used to be a member of MI6, who worked in, you know, foreign offices all around the world. He was probably about 65 when he got involved in trying to help me with it. He'd looked all through the legal documents to see if he could find a way. He never even saw the mistake. I was given the opportunity to find that really easy mistake. They were looking in a too complex way, and I found it. And somebody else who was also struggling, an ex-member of the EU, a member of staff who had been seen to be not following the rules and had been dropped from the EU job that he had, and was then had the pressure put on him like they were putting pressure on me to be evicted. And he was doing his own work legally. And he had a high-up job on the London GLC for quite a while. So these were people in the know. But what happens is if you put an intent out and you use your own vibration and your own awareness and consciousness, and this isn't woo-woo stuff, as some people would call it. This is actual quantum-level fact. Then it works for you, and that's what happened to me in that. But, I mean, for the next period of time, like the 2 years off and on, I was going in and out of court up against five different judges. And I was let through five times by absolute flukes, really. I'll call them flukes because I knew nothing legally. But what was happening was the universe was traveling with me and allowing me to be there for 2 years and carry out what I needed to do there. It was an amazing landmark on an energetic level that I was inhabiting. I had the use of the mill and the land around there. And even when they locked me out of the mill, I had the use of the whole common, which was a powerful point just off the St. Mary line that travels throughout the UK. So we were actually celebrating and doing torchlight processions up to the circles in the woods, and we were actually holding the energy there for 2 years. And I was actually there 4 years, but for the last 2 years I was there, according to them, illegally. But I knew I needed to be there for that length of time. It cost me a lot of money. It was quite interesting, really, because I had no money when I went there. And when I was there, I inherited £45,000 from a woman that I'd given healing to, who died when she was 93. And I'd given her healing over her younger years in her 80s, and she left me the money. And the money allowed me to stay there and not be milling in the mill, but it allowed me to use the land. So there's always reasons. Anyway, having gone into court what actually happened was, as I said, I used to go home from the library with all these legal books, and I used to write the cases I was going to try and read and act on in court. And they always, of course, I didn't know what I was doing, so they would always not be allowed. Most of the things I came up with were not allowed. And I learned a lot in that way, that it's not about the crime. It's not about the fact that everything they were doing against me was wrong and against the law. It was the way they brought it forward in court that gave them the win in ultimately. But on the last day, I decided to speak from my heart when the judge said, "We're not allowing you through anymore, Linda. You've lost. You're going to be evicted. So the best thing is that you leave. We're going to allow you a month to leave and find somewhere." And the bills have all gone against you, and they were building. Every time I went into court, they would pass me the bill, and they would. The judge, it was done in a certain way, which I thought was funny at the time, but I learned later from Winston Shrout what it was, and from various other people. I'm pretty sure that was in his material, because I learned from a lot of people after him. But it's called a slider. And what the judge does is he slides across the table. It doesn't leave the table. It slid across the table to the solicitor. So I would normally, being in court, would have had a solicitor, wouldn't I, if I hadn't have been litigating for myself. But at that point, I couldn't get a solicitor to work against the local council. They wouldn't take the case. Not even the non-Freemason ones wouldn't take the case. So I was acting as a solicitor, if you like, litigating for myself. So they had to carry out the same actions. And this is why they hate it, because it's all rather dodgy when you're a loose cannon in court. And I now know why, because they slid it across to me every time. And I used to say to the judge, "What do you want me to do with it?" And he said, "These are the costs, Linda. We need you to check them." And every time I used to check them, and sometimes I'd pick fault with them and say, "Well, that's cost you a lot to get that information about me, hasn't it?" And the judge would agree with me, and he would say, "No, we're only going to pay you half of that, et cetera, et cetera." And then I would hand them back. Well, on this day in court, this was the end of the whole case. So the costs had come to $18,856, I think it was. And I had no money at all at this point. I'd spent all of it keeping the place open, running all sorts of events for people up there, educating people about the council and how corrupt they were, all sorts of stuff. We had fun doing it. But he slid it across to me, and I knew that was the end of the whole thing for me. So I was going to say what I wanted to say from my heart, and I just put my hand on it as he slid it across to me, and I put my hand on it and I slid it back, and I said, "That has nothing to do with me. We all know this is a so-called court of law, but we also all know there's no justice here." And I looked around at all of them as I said it, and then I said, "I'm not one of your numbers. I'm a human being." Now at that point, I've slid it back, and the prosecution has looked at the judge. The judge has looked at the prosecution, or the other guard, the solicitor, the other real solicitor with the barrister sitting next to him, and they're sort of shocked. And the judge said, "Are you saying, Linda, that you have no powder for your musket? I mean, have you heard anything so stupid in your life?" I've been trying to figure out why he said that. Was that just a so ridiculous comment? And we know he was saying, "Have you got any money?" And I just laughed. And I said, "If you're asking me if I have any money, no, I don't." And I just went silent. And what actually happened was they said that you can leave the court now. So I left, and I was expecting the bill to be at my address within weeks. It never, ever came. And this is 8 years ago. And what I found out was that I didn't contract with them. When they slide that bill across to you, you have to slide, this solicitor slides it back in your name. He accepts it in your name. He's your agent. And they are all in it together. So when you're actually litigating yourself, none of that happens. So that's one, you know, that this is where, if you, you know, when you think about this, I knew nothing about the Freeman movement at that moment. All I knew was that I felt like there was an injustice, and that I was a sovereign being and I should be treated like one. And that's why I said the words that I did. And I went beyond you know, owning and being Linda Jocelyn. I said, I am a human being. I am not one of your numbers. It just came out of my mouth. I had no idea why. I felt really good I'd done it and said it. I felt satisfied. I left that court thinking, okay, that's fine. I'll just go bankrupt. And that would have been fine. I wouldn't have felt anything about it at all. But as I said, the bill never came. But what happened there was that because I knew I was sovereign and I was bold enough to speak from that sovereign place, they couldn't send me the bill. And this is where the other side of this sovereign Freeman movement, they just don't get it. They're too left brain logical. And Paul, in these comments to Katmar and to Mel, is definitely operating in that way. And I think this is where you have to have a holographic idea of how this works. It's to do with you. It's to do with every one of us. And this is how Mel has not paid for water all those years. I know people who've never paid for electricity. You know, I knew one woman who had, I don't know how many kids she had, actually six, I think. And she was a right character. And she never, she had her meter rigged in the houses that she lived in. She never paid. She thought I was mad paying for electric. But at the time I knew her, I had no idea about how it was all run. And I felt like I was in the system and I was living in the system and that was it. And I would have had fear about doing it. She had no fear and she never, ever got caught. And this is the whole thing about it. It's the energy that you produce around it. And if you have Paul's attitude where you're really angst and you're really feeling like they've got the pressure on you and you're never going to win, then that's exactly what's going to happen to you. Even within the sovereign movement, even if you knew a lot of information, you would still lose because you will attract it. You will be the one who slips up in court. You will be the one who makes a mistake and answers the judge. You know, like the guy did on the video. There's some great videos out there, and there's a great one where the guy kept saying he wouldn't answer to the name. You know, it's like me saying, allegedly, every time the judge says, are you Linda Jocelyn? And I say, allegedly. And then he, you know, he carries on and I won't answer him. And he has to abandon the court because if I don't contract with him and say, yes, sir, I am Linda Jocelyn. If he says, are you Linda Jocelyn or what is your name? And I say, Linda from the family of the Jocelyns, then he can't contract. I have to say the name on the contract, which is the court summons, right? And if I don't, you know, he has to abandon the court. And usually they can, I mean, I've seen people being taken down into the cells, but they only take you down for a couple of hours because it's totally illegal for them to hold you because you haven't even admitted that you're the person on the contract and that you're contracting with them. So they try and frighten you. And a few guys have gone down into the cells for an hour or so and come back up and done exactly the same again. But there's a great video of a guy who the judge keeps doing it. He abandons the court. He then comes back in and he abandons the court, says the case is over or whatever, or it's delayed. And then the guy walks out of court and the judge calls him his name as he's walking out the door. And the guy turns around and says, yes, he's contracted. And that's an amazing video. It's such a good lesson because he carried it out for hours in the court. But as the guy got him on a casual exit, the guy had forgotten who he was, forgotten that he isn't the name, and he answered to the name and the judge had him in handcuffs. And that is on a video on the internet. So this is the game we're playing. But when you know you're sovereign, all sorts of magical things happen. You know, this is where it changes. And I was just going back to Paul's letter here where he's, or his comment, and he's talking about how yeah, right. If you do not know who you are and unable to establish your competence before the law, you have no standing and you've already lost. Christ alone knows how bloody difficult it is to obtain remedy from these bastards. Well, the remedy is don't ever go into court unless you really have to. So if you get court summons, just ignore them. You know, and if anybody else comes around, don't let them in. You know, if you've actually committed a crime, then you need to go to court and get remedy and sort out why you committed. I'm talking about a real crime of like murder, attacking somebody, some sort of criminal act. That's completely different. None of us are going to agree with you getting away with that. What we're talking about is civil issue. The police will come after you and arrest you if you've committed a murder, an assault, a rape, anything like that. And you need to go to court for remedy and to sort that out and to see what you need to do to heal yourself. But if it's a civil case, then you don't go to court. You do not contract with them. And that's really important to know. So where he's saying that you have no standing, you do have this. You have the standing to know who you really are and that you are not part of that system. So the remedy is not going to court. I mean, I have been to court, as I said, on that case, and that was over a period of 2 years. But I also went to court. This was again just after that court case. I'd moved, obviously, because they were going to evict me, so I moved pretty quick within the month. And then a few weeks later, I got this £365 bill for a speeding offence, and it had gone up to £365 because I'd moved, and I'd never received any of the original pieces of information. And what happened there was really interesting as well, because it was, again, completely me going into court being me. I still didn't know anything about the Freeman movement, and I was pretty worried, because there I was absolutely skint. I managed to find a house. I was trying to get work. I borrowed the money to move after this big adventure, and there I got a bill for £365, and I really thought they could do me for that. So I went down to the court. They summoned me to court, and I went to court. And I actually waited. And some poor guy before me who speeded just stood in the dock and just completely acted as if he was, you know, the complete victim to their court system. And I watched this happen. I'd never been in court like that before, not for anything like that. And I just thought, well, I just have to stay with my breath. I have to stay in complete awareness. I have to stay in the now moment because I know who I am. And when I stood up and they read out this speeding offence, and I said, they just read out that there'd been this offence and they didn't even say what it was. And I said to her, I interrupted and I said, I don't even know what you're accusing me of, right? And what I said was, see, this doesn't normally happen. People don't speak up. I said, I don't know what you are accusing me of. Now, me, as this human being, is not Linda Jocelyn, who was on that contract. And it caused all sorts of things to happen in the court, because the team of magistrates, and there were three of them, then asked the prosecution whether he knew what I was being accused of, right? And at that point, and I also piped up and said, and I'd like proof of whatever you're accusing me of, right? And the prosecution stood up and he said, ma'am, we'd like to drop this whole case because the files have been deleted. And the magistrates looked at me and said, it's fine, it's over. I didn't even have to pay the original fine that started off at something like £60 and escalated to £368. They just asked me to leave the court. Now, again, that was because of what I said. And, you know, I actually said, I like to know what you're accusing me of. Now, people don't speak up in court. They don't speak from who they are. All they do is they stand there in fear and reverence to the court and they answer questions. What you have to do if you ever go to court, I learned there and then since then, I've learned from a lot of Freeman people, you ask the questions. That completely throws the whole system in court because you're speaking from you and you're asking them questions. You're not acting as the straw man. You're not acting as the trust fund owner. Well, not owner, trust fund, I'm trying to think who it is. It's benefactor. Not the benefactor, actually. It's the trustee. I think it's the trustee. You are, if you contract with them to the name is the trustee. I believe that's how it is. So if you aren't coming from that point, which I wasn't, I was talking about me the human being and I wasn't answering questions I was asking them, then you actually, you know, they had to dismiss the case. So within a month, this was, I'd been in court twice, walked out. First one was over 18,000. The second one was 365. And then what happened is somebody sent me an email, and this was, they didn't know anything about me going to court. Somebody just sent me an email with the Winston Shrout material on. And I started to go down that rabbit hole, and I just couldn't believe what I found out. And then I knew all the reasons that those two things had happened to me in court. And then I understood how I'd got away with it, how they couldn't do it to me. But when I was in court, I was operating from me, from who I know I am, with a right to speak. So that is the most important thing. You can play games with all of this, and this is what Paul is talking about, is make sure you've got enough information to play the game well enough. But you can also do it from knowing nothing, like I did. I knew nothing about that, but I knew I was sovereign. And I wasn't going to let them. I didn't bow down to them at all, you know. So comprehend that there's much more to this. And there's great simple ones that you can do. Always just put no contract on parking fines that you get, you know. And stop parking if it really is dangerous and stuff like that. But if you're just parking somewhere because you really need to go somewhere, there's no other spaces, then you have every right to do so. And if it isn't dangerous, you should just put no contract when you send it back to them, and nothing happens. They do play little games with you. They certainly played a game with me with one I got in London. I was still in the car when they gave me a ticket, and I was waiting for a friend to come out of this greengrocer's with a big box of mangoes that we were taking to a festival to eat. And it was very interesting because they actually wrote me a letter saying that I had filled in all the forms and that I'd told them somebody else was driving. It was all lies. I hadn't. But if I'd have written back and said, no, I didn't tell you somebody else was driving, I would have contracted with them. So those guys in the office that collect those fines, they know that, you know, they know all about it. And that's what they were trying to trick me into contracting. And I didn't. I just didn't reply to that one. It was difficult not to, because they were so awful to have done that, weren't they? They were lying and they were mucking with me. But I had to withhold from doing anything because anything would have been contracting with them. So remember that. They play games with you. And these are the people in the office that fine you. So that, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. But I just want to make it clear here, Paul, that a lot of us are doing a heck of a lot of stuff, and we're staying sovereign. And we're not all keyed in just to the left brain research side of it. We're keyed into our hearts. We're keyed into the fact that we know we've been here many times before. We've played our roles probably in the law system. You know, we're not just one lifers. We've been in other lives. So many of us would have been in the law system in some way. We might have been one of the corrupt judges. Who knows? So this is a game that we're all committed to go beyond and to bring in the other levels. That's what it's really about, Paul. I just want to say that to you because I found it really 3D in the way that you were discussing it. And I think there's a lot of fear there, and I feel for you there. But what I'm saying to you is learn the higher consciousness and the awareness side of this too. Always be in the now moment, and you will come out with something in court that you never thought you knew. See, if you're in the now moment, you're in contact with the genius energy banks, the all-knowing, all-seeing eye and mind of the universe. You will be given the answers. You will say stuff that you didn't even think, you know, you could say in court. And it will come because you're connected to the now moment, not because you're connected to just the information. I know lots of Freeman information now. Litmus on the Freeman site, if you put Litmus in a search, you'll probably get it. Litmus is the name he goes under. And he has all the information about him gaining his own complete freedom from the birth certificate and everything and from the system. He has logged onto a website, and I think it's called Freeman. Freeman.com, probably, something like that. But just put Litmus Freeman in, and that will lead you to it on a Google search. And yes, that information is valuable, but only if you can also work the magic. Work the awareness, work the genius consciousness. Be in that now moment. Know you're sovereign, whatever is going on. And then incredible things happen beyond the normal, because that's the world that we live in, the quantum world. And in that quantum level, all sorts of things happen. Like, you know, Roger Hayes getting that nearly arresting that judge in the court. That was an amazing day. We were covering it live throughout what they were doing on the radio. And that was fantastic, because anybody else could go and do that now. And all it takes is gumption, you know, let go of the fear and go. And if none of the judges say they are on their oath, and every judge, if you ever go into court, always ask the judge, sir, are you on your oath today? They cannot say yes, because they're not on their oath, because their oath is to the Queen, and the Queen's oath is to us. And it just can't work anymore, because that's not what happens. It's a corporate company. Every court in the country is floated on the stock market. Every police station in the country is floated on the stock market. They are all corporate companies. And if you didn't know that, check it out. Anyway, I think that's enough of that side of it, unless people want to ask me questions. Roger Hayes, yeah, we talked about that. Anybody who knows about that, let us know. Do you know, because I had the internet, the only information I was getting was off local radio, and it's been really interesting over the Olympic security issues, right? Because on local BBC radio here in Suffolk, and I listen to Essex as well, it's been quite interesting hearing all the people ring in to these news shows where they have debates going on. Ex-policemen, trained security guards who are out of work, all these people who are highly qualified in security, who applied for jobs for the Olympics through the I think it was it G45 company? I can't remember what they're called, G something, and never even got a reply. Now, one after the other, on 3 or 4 days this week, I've been listening, or last week, I've been listening to people ringing in saying, my son applied, he's this, I'm an ex-policeman, I applied, I didn't even get a reply. Absolutely crazy. So what is going on with that? There may be something far deeper, or it may be that they're a bungling unit of people who were not in any way experienced enough to actually carry out the security of some sort in a good way for the Olympics. But when you look at what is actually going on there, and that people who applied for jobs and who were very well trained didn't even get an interview, didn't even get a reply, it's pretty mind-blowing. I would say it's all pretty dodgy. There's a lot going on there which is not coming out in a lot of the main news programs. I don't have a telly, so maybe it is on the main television news that there is really a lot behind the scenes going on. I don't know. But the other thing about it is stay away from the fear, because all of it is built on fear. I mean, you know, all this terrorist missiles on the roofs, crazy stuff. We know that most of the terrorist acts that have been played out, most of them are coming from, you know, the elite cabal who are playing the negative guys this time round and are actually, you know, keeping control that way, and on our managing the world affairs by carrying out terrorist attacks. So the whole thing is just made up, really. And a wonderful article that I saw this week, I'm going to have to talk about this one because it's mind-blowing that it got into the Daily Mail newspaper, right? Now, this is the headlines on this is going to shock you for the Daily Mail, I think. This is how patients can be healed by telling them that they've had surgery, even when it's all a sham. I didn't even know experiments were going on like this. I know that the placebo effect has been growing and growing and growing, because we all know there is a placebo effect. And scientists kind of accept this without understanding or even trying to understand how it works, or even get involved with vibration and essence and us being in really in the power of creating what we want in our bodies. But so we know the placebo effect. I think most people know this, don't they, that over the last I don't know whether it's the last 2 or 3 years, but the placebo effect has become bigger than the results that they get from most medications. So if they do a trial with a placebo and the real medicine, it's just completely confusing these days, because it used to be quite high on the placebo effect, so they had to take that into consideration. But the placebo is where they give you a sugar pill and tell you that it's the real thing. And then, because they're trying to get a result to see how many people are really getting cured by the medicine. And there's always been the placebo effect, where some people get cured even when they're given the sugar pill, right? But the placebo effect of people being cured just by thinking they've taken the medication has gone so sky high. I read this in an article, it was sometime last year, and I may have mentioned it on one of the programs. It's mind-blowing that it's gone up and up and up, because people, you know, we're now in a world of a higher vibration. We're now in a more awakened world where people are realizing more, and they're trusting their own feelings, and they're trusting their vibration more. So, and this is happened in trials, okay? But what I'm telling you now is going even way, way beyond that. And this is being talked about in the main media. And this is by a reporter called John Nash. And he actually says, the situation with that heading, how patients can be healed by telling them they've had surgery even when it's all a sham. The situation sounds like a sick practical joke. You're admitted to hospital for an important operation, and the staff give you an anesthetic, wheel you into surgery, but unknown to you, the surgeon merely makes a few tiny cuts on your skin. They do this on the part of your body where you're supposed to have been opened up, and send you back to the ward and tell you the op was a success. The strange fact, however, is that such medical fakery can actually produce cures. This procedure, called sham surgery by doctors, can even cure as many people as the real operations they mimic. Indeed, sham surgery is known to have a remarkable high success with arthritic knee joints, damaged backs, and even serious illnesses such as Parkinson's and heart disease. It gives a whole new meaning to the term operating theatre. Sham surgery's amazing success is attributed to the placebo effect, the self-curing power of the human mind and body that can be unleashed when a person is led to believe they have received a powerful therapy. So it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? And you get a good explanation of the placebo effect that I was talking about there. But I had no idea they were actually doing this. This is pretty incredible that doctors are actually carrying this out. And they're getting as good a result from the sham surgery, where the surgery doesn't actually happen, as they are with the operations, where the person's put under risk by having things cut out. And I'll go on to see if I can find some of the pieces here. Right, to believe they've received a powerful therapy. In trials of new drugs, the placebo power is generated by giving some of the participants a chemically inactive sugar pill. Right. Their health is then compared with people on the real pills, blah, blah, blah. But can surgical ops be tested in the same way? This question has inspired some surgeons to perform fake surgery on patients, then compare their outcomes with people who had the real thing. And the fake operations are sometimes turning out to be highly effective. Such results are undermining the worth of commonly performed procedures, and they are also opening a rift in medicine. This is amazing that we now have a rift occurring in medicine, and a possibility of a rift where they can start to comprehend that we can heal ourselves, and actually thinking yourself cured and not hanging on and having an attachment to the illness. This is mind-blowing stuff. This is real breakthroughs when you think about it. I mean, I've worked in alternative health for over 30 years, and I've seen incredible things happen under healing hands, with people just changing their emotional attitude, healing themselves mentally, and their mental attitude and their belief systems, and their physical body falls into different alignment. I've seen it over and over again. But here we have a possibility of a breakthrough within the formal medical world, and I think this is pretty mind-blowing. Sham surgery's potential was highlighted last week with new research showing the past 10 years have seen a big drop in the number of knee operations carried out in the US. This is arthroscopy. I think that's the, it's got to be the one for possibly arthritis. This one remains one of the most common orthopedic procedures. This keyhole surgery is often performed on patients with arthritis to remove torn or floating cartilage that can interfere with the movement of the joint. The procedure is also called arthroscopic lavage or arthroscopic debridement. 10 years ago, surgeons in Houston, Texas, gave 180 patients with knee osteoarthritis either real surgery or simply made three scalpel incisions around their knee. The results published in the New England Journal of Medicine were amazing. The outcomes after the arthroscopic lavage or the debridement were no better than those after a placebo procedure where no surgery was actually carried out. And this was put into the journal by a lead researcher, J. Bruce Mosley. In both cases, the patients said their pain had been relieved, but it seems this benefit comes from the power of the patient's mind, not the surgeon's scalpel. And that's incredible. They did it, 180 patients. So they did a, some of them were the real surgery, some were the, just the three little incisions that looked like they'd had surgery. And this is pretty incredible stuff, because what we're looking at here is again, is people coming out of, they're having to come out of left brain mind activity and start to bring in their right brain of knowing, of letting go to the truth, which can't in any way be proved with a physical operation or can't be proved with a physical piece of evidence. And I find this amazing. I love it, because for years and years I've talked to people about the healing power of the mind and how our attitude is the biggest thing that changes our lives and our belief system that we grow up with, that if you don't ever do the healing and the processing on that, then you're coming through with records that will inhibit your growth as the highest consciousness people that you could be, you know, and the human potential that you have. And that goes for the physical body as well as the mind and as well as the emotions and our spiritual selves. It's all down to whether we can live out our potential in all these ways and clear ourselves, go clear, you know, take away anything that is in there that is not ours. And I mean, a good way to do this with your beliefs is to actually have a notepad and to make a note at the top and say, my beliefs, or, and you know, these are what I see as the beliefs I still have. And then write down what you know that you have beliefs about. And just keep going, you know, just sit there for an hour or so and just make those lists and maybe get up and do other stuff and still have that in your mind of what other beliefs you know you have. You could do it over a period of a couple of days and do it all down the left-hand side, because after you've got a fair list, then what you're going to be doing is looking at every one of those beliefs and to see whether they are a truth and whether you know they are or whether you would just told these things and these were indoctrinations that were given to you as a child. You know, it's like you know, one of the big things comes to mind as soon as I think of beliefs is people's belief in religion and what they believe, you know, and a lot of people are still waiting for Jesus Christ to sail in on a cloud and save them, and many of the so-called truthers are waiting for that. They have that all worked in there somehow. I don't quite know how, but they do. They rage and they can be quite insulting, some of them. And if you don't believe in their religion, and yet, you know, if they are true religions of the material that was given by the said man, then they wouldn't be acting like that, because he was all into forgiveness. So it's really quite interesting. But they are still sailing on beliefs that were given to them either by their family, and I think sometimes family is stronger than the church is that you, if the family goes to church and believes those stories, then what happens is the children are taught them by their family first, and then they're made to go to church. So in a lot of ways, the family is stronger than the church. But you've got a lot of beliefs that come. It's got to be one of the main ones is the stories that are believed through that. And then try and, you know, make another column, like I said, and have a look at where they come from and whether you know. How many of the beliefs that you have do you actually know as being true? And are they things you know? Because to say I know something is totally different than saying I believe. So this is a really good experiment to do. You could also then make another column and put, do I know this to be a truth? As well as looking at who gave you that belief and where you got it from, do you know it to be true? Because that's a really good exercise to get you to respond to who you are and what you know and what feels right in your heart, in your vibration, rather than have anything left in your energy field, which is coming through from a belief. Because I feel right now it's dangerous stuff to ever be coming through from, you know, a belief which you've never even looked at. You've never thought any more than you were told it was that way, or you grew up with that in your head as being a belief, and now you're still hanging on to it. I'm just going to give you a little bit more information on this mind-blowing stuff here. Other studies have found tying off arteries in the chest to treat the pain of angina, a once common procedure, helps 90% of patients. But so does a fake operation using cut marks. There you go. When are they going to stop cutting into people and give in to this, I wonder? It's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it? You know, I mean, I am amazed. If this had been in The Independent, I'd have believed it more, but it's actually in The Mail. Just trying to see what other... Given our emerging knowledge about surgical placebos, it might make sense to try a great deal more fakery in the operating theatre to tease out which ops work and which simply harness our body's curative powers. Absolutely true remark there, because some of these operations, they're going to find out we're never doing it anyway. Because how many people would just, you know, initiate in their own healing process even though they'd had the op? That's what's going to happen out of this. But they're going to hang on, aren't they? It's like the cancer thing where, you know, day by day I hear revelations coming through about what they now know treats breast cancer, what now will help in a big way, prostate cancer. They're coming through with stuff every day and they're saying this drug and that drug, you know, and it's expensive, blah, blah, blah. And I think what they're doing is they're coming in off the back of baking soda and stuff like that and alkalizing the body. That's what they're actually doing. They're coming out with a drug. And if you analysed it, I bet you anything, it's going to have very common ingredients in it, because they've now realised that cancer is a fungus. Cancer only occurs when your body has gone very alkaline, very acid, sorry. So that, you know, they're going to be looking now, because they've done it all through the people on the alternative medicine side who know the truth about the food, the emotions we have, everything like that. Is changing our bodies to acid. The pollution in the air, the pollution that we put in the body, changes the body to acid, which then leaves you wide, wide open to cancer if you're also going through emotional traumas and shocks. And, you know, I feel like they're stringing it out now, because cancer, you know, actually treating cancer where they're not even curing it, they're just holding it off for a little bit and sometimes killing people right off, even by the operations and the chemo, because chemo kills more people than it cures. You know, they're kind of keeping the industry going because it's a huge money-making operation. And now here in The Mail, we've got the information coming out. So many, many doctors are going to know about this. Many doctors are going to have seen it in the medical journals. They're going to know that what's happening is people are curing themselves even when the operations happening and they're curing themselves even when the operation isn't done and they're just given three marks and pretended to that there is an operation. Surely we're at the end of that incredible mechanistic medicine corporate rule. We've got to be at the end of it. We're coming to the end of it. You know, the drugs are all being thrown out by a lot of people. A lot of people are realizing that, you know, if they feed themselves right and they treat themselves right, they're not going to need any drugs to cure anything because they're sovereign in their own right by looking after themselves. So we're at an amazing point in history, in our time, in this cycle, where everything is coming to a head. Everything is being revealed. The real world, the magic of the world that we live in, the magic of us is being revealed daily in front of us, if you care to look. And I'm not even looking on the internet. As I said to you, you know, I've not been on the internet for 10 days. So just reading a few papers and listening to a bit of local radio has given me a lot of good information as to what changes are really afoot. And this is not about who's arresting the cabal. I haven't even seen anything about that, actually. And to me, it was just a game those people were playing to get their sort of fame figures up, you know, to become somebody. They were pretending all of that stuff. And maybe they did have some information, but it all looked bogus to me, pretty much. And when I went online today, I didn't see anything about it. So it seems like it's died. It was a dying duck when I went offline 10 days ago, but it seems to have really died now. What we're waiting for is us. We're waiting for ourselves to wake up more and more and more. And it's only by comprehending who you are, what you are, how you can speak up for yourself, how you can be who you are, you know, and that we create this reality. Every single one of us creates every part of it. And when this cycle ends, you'll see it all fade in front of you, I think, because I think where we're going is somewhere quite different to where we've been. I'm just wetting my throat with some green tea here because I'm having to talk quite a long time. If anybody wants to ring in, and certainly if anybody wants to ring in on the Freeman issue I was talking about and on the little squabble that was going on our network, please do. If you want to talk about the amazing cures that go on, then please call in too. And the amazing ways people heal themselves when they take back responsibility and they're not relying on doctors. And actually just, you know, you can actually have work from another person because I've seen incredible things happen, including in my own family, which I've talked about, under people's laying on of hands healing, which means you're just, you know, allowing yourself to be given the healing energy through somebody else's hands and through their connection because they're more detached than you are about your own complaint. It's a very good way of doing it because sometimes we can heal other people, but it's more difficult to heal ourselves because we can't get out of the way of our own corrupted system in there to do with ourselves, you know. And there's too much emotion involved sometimes around ourselves to actually, you know, be truly successful at healing if it's a complaint that's really taken hold. So don't worry about going to a healer and letting them use their connection to the energy because that's all it is. It's like being jump-started in your car when your car battery fails, you know, and you just get a jump off somebody else's leads. There's no problem with that. It's the same with having healing. It's like having a jump start and it's nothing to feel guilty about. In this article, it's saying here, British ethics experts are extremely cautious. Last December, Richard Huxtable, Deputy Director of Bristol University Centre for Ethics in Medicine, warned patients can feel exploited if they learn that they are in a trial where they may be given fake treatment. A paper he co-authored in the journal surveyed people with Parkinson's disease and reported how one respondent thought the idea of fooling patients in the interest of science sounded like something out of Nazi Germany. Well, I don't think it is, and you're not doing them harm. You can't possibly be doing them harm, because if it didn't work without giving them the surgery, you could then go and give them the surgery. That's not Nazi Germany at all. And that's interesting that that's been put in the article, isn't it? Because that will get a lot of other people. They will only think about that part of it. I mean, actually, if you're being fooled that you're healed and you are healed, I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. Professor Peter Kay, consultant orthopaedic surgeon from the Royal College of Surgeons, agrees going under the knife will always create some degree of placebo effect, but says most surgical procedures are far more effective than sham treatments. Well, we don't know that yet right now, and we won't know that until they do more and more of these sham surgeries. And they do trial after trial to show us just how much is happening, because people go under the knife and then heal themselves, as well as not going under the knife and healing themselves. There's a huge, whole new trial got to come out of this now. Much more, I would think, involved in this than they ever felt when they started it. We can't ethically give patients sham surgical procedures in the NHS, as it may involve cutting a patient's skin. This is what he said, this Peter Kay, who brought up the fact that it might not be ethical. We can't ethically give patients sham surgical procedures in the NHS, as it may involve cutting a patient's skin and even giving a general anaesthetic, he says. However, we should try to work out where this placebo effect comes from and see if we can capture it. That's amazing. What are they going to try and do? Bottle it? Charge us for it? It's us. It's within us. It's knowledge about ourselves that works here. I can't believe that's in there. That's mind-blowing. I imagine that any of you can read the whole of this article, because this is big. This is a whole page. And this was on Tuesday, July the 10th. And it's the Daily Mail. And they do have mail online, so I'm sure you can find it. I hope somebody does, because we could get it put on the network. This is a really, really important article. Yeah, see if we can capture it. Yeah, right, so that's where they're going. That's a bit like the God particle, isn't it, at CERN, that they've spent billions and billions on and used hundreds of miles of space with their machinery to see if they can find out whether there is a God particle. Mind-blowing. These children play, don't they? These are mainly men playing. This is another part of the article. Professor Marianne Campbell, director of the Health Services Research Unit at Aberdeen University, is pessimistic about the future of sham surgery. She surveyed hundreds of British surgeons, anaesthetists, and medical ethicists, and concluded sham surgery trials in Britain would be very difficult because our medical profession is riven by opposing and often strongly held opinions about surgical placebos. And that's so true. I'm amazed it's even happened so far and gone so as far as it has, because there are really strongly held opinions about surgical placebos and ordinary placebos, and saying they're just flukes. This is like spontaneous healings that happen, and they say they call it spontaneous something, don't they, recoveries. When somebody has a tumor and they have healing by laying on of hands, they then go back to the doctor, who arranges for another scan and finds out the tumor isn't there, and they say, oh well, it's spontaneous something, and they put it down to just a fluke. There is no explanation of it, and they don't want to talk about it either. And it happens more times than they would like you to know about. We might wonder if there is another reason British surgeons might resist placebo trials. They may be worried that sham surgery could expose the fact their scrubs are the equivalent of the emperor's new clothes. I like that. It would seem a great pity if sham surgery trials failed to take place in this country. For while patients may worry they may in rare cases be given treatment that is faked, it is surely even more of a concern if some of our most frequently conducted operations do, in fact, serve no good at all and only expose us to the very real risks involved of going under the surgeon's knife. And that's what I feel about it, that you know, a lot of the procedures that are carried out, and if we take chemotherapy for as one of them, I mean, we know as a fact that more people die from the chemo than ever die of cancer, and that if the cancers were just left, a lot of people, their body, if they started to learn about their body, could go into a spontaneous healing and sort themselves out. They might have to go into one of the clinics or learn about going on all raw food diets, so that you're not feeding the tumours, because the tumours are looking for the acid alkaline substances, you know, and the sugar, the refined sugar, the refined flour, the meat, the salt. Salt is a huge feeder to tumours. I remember going back a lot of years now, at least probably 18 years ago, when I was going on home visits to people who needed home visits for therapy and healing. And I went to this man who had cancer of the esophagus. And it was great to see him. I got him working on taking responsibility, because they weren't going to do any more surgery. And his energy had gone so much by this time that he couldn't go out and do the lovely, he was a bit of an inventor, and he used to go out to his shed and do all engineering projects and stuff. And he was probably about 65, something like that, maybe a little bit older. And when I got him to go on all raw food, you know, blended, like blended shakes of all raw food, his wife told me when I went back after 2 or 3 days that, my God, he's been up the shed again, and he had the energy to do this and that, and he's like his old self. And it was amazing, because it was a bit of an education to him. And he said, oh, God, you'll have to tell the wife what to do and what she needs. And I did all that. And he was over the moon that it happened. But he did say, but I am missing my fry up breakfast and my fry up this and fry up that. He loved his sausages and bacon and his meat and salt, you know. And it was amazing, because that man was dead within weeks after that, because he couldn't do it. When I went to him next, he said, oh, I've gone back to my sausages and my bacon and all of that. And what was happening? He would have been feeding the tumours again. You know, and then the body just gets so riddled with the tumours and the parasitic nature of it, you know, in the fungus side of it, because the baking soda, I can never remember his name, he's an Italian man who was actually put in prison for treating people with baking soda, but he's the one who alkalizes bodies with baking soda, and he does it intravenously where it's needed, or topically, you know, but if it's needed inside in the liver or something like that, he would do it, inject it, and was put in prison for it in Italy at one point. But he has an incredible survival rate, something like 80-odd%. And I mean, you know, if he'd have understood, the man who had the cancer, that what he was doing was feeding it. And what this man says, I forgot what I was going to say there. The Italian man says that every tumor that he's ever seen, when it's been cut out of somebody's body, is white. And, you know, you may see veins in it, and you may see all sorts, because all sorts of genetic stuff goes on. I mean, in some tumors, they find teeth and hair, because all sorts of mutations go on within the cells, so they start producing all the cells of the body. But the main part of the tumour is white, and he sees it as just fungus. And he says he's never seen any that haven't been white as a bulk entity, and that is the fungus. And it's because of the acid. And as soon as you alkaline the body, then it starts to disappear. I mean, if this man had known that and taken in the information I was trying to impart to him, then he wouldn't. But he just loved. And he said to me, I just love. And he was willing to die for his sausages and bacon. And he did. Very, very soon afterwards, he stopped asking me to call, because he wasn't going to be following anything. And he felt like it would be pointless. And he stopped going to the shed again and doing his projects and being creative. And then he just died. And that's how some people are. They have a choice in it. And the choice to be who they really are is too big for them. The choice to go beyond the norm is too big for them. And maybe it's because, and this happens to people who've lived that standard belief life, the life based on the beliefs in the matrix, because that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? All of what we're talking about tonight is the difference with being totally plugged into the matrix or not. And that goes for the legal and the medical side of this. You know, who we really are is something completely separate. And if you unplug yourself, feel it, you know, see it as a visualization. That, you know, those, I always see it as those suckers, you know, that kids have in like arrows, and they, and you can do this with clothes pegs in your house, or little hooks in your house. They have a sucker, don't they? So they sucker to the wall. You just lick them and wet them, push them on, and then they suck in, right? Well, that's how that we're plugged into the matrix. And if you feel that slurp and noise and that pop as you pull it off, imagine you're doing that. You're going to completely unplug from the matrix and see it symbolically. You're unplugging from the legal. You're unplugging from the lies of the medical. You're unplugging from the supermarket corporate power. Get yourself an organic box delivered. I had a beautiful box of organic veg for £12.85 delivered today, completely fresh, just picked from the fields this morning. And they deliver all over the UK. And this was an ad that I saw on our network, because we're part of AdSense. It's quite funny. The ad came up, Riverford Organic Foods, and that's all that happens. And I can place extra stuff in that box if I want, or I can just have what they put in it. Or I could ask for all different individual items by going to their website if I want to. But you have a basic of $12.50 a week that you need to pay. That's including all the delivery and everything. And you just pick the items you want. But they do set boxes. That's a medium veg box. And I mean, that's your food. You know, that's the basis that your food should be around, is organic vegetable and fruit. And then your nuts and seeds and herbs. If you're going to add anything else to that, it's extra. See it like that, because that's who we are. We are live energy. So if you're not putting live energy into the body, then you're not going to be able to hold the power of your resonance and frequency so much. And it also balances the yin and yang differently, doesn't it? Because meat is so yang. I know I had somebody this week that I did a reading for, and we started talking a little bit about yin and yang. And I know I did this in an archive program, but it's a long time ago. But if you think of the most yang thing you need is salt. And yang is the heavy food. Sometimes we need grounding, and we could do with a bit of yang. But your best way to eat that is to go, you know, into the balance of yin and yang first, which is grains. Grains are on the balance line of yin and yang. So yin is right up in the air. If you think on the foot of a page, on the top of a page of 12 inches, say, you've got the yin at the top, right? And at the bottom of that foot page, you've got yang and you've got salt. So you've got sugar and salt, yin and yang. Okay, and then coming up that line on the yang, you've got meat, red meat, and then you've got the white meat, chicken, and then you've got the fish. Okay, that's all on the meat side there, very yang. If you eat meat every day, it keeps men very aggressive when they eat a lot of red meat every day. They're never going to get involved in their own sensitivity if they keep eating that much meat. They're never going to claim their gifts of clairvoyance, clairaudience, creativity, inspiration. A lot of men think you can't survive with a lot of meat. Now, if you were eating a lot of leafy veg and salad, which come above the line, because your grains are in the middle, on that middle line, and that 6 inches down, you've got the middle line of that piece of paper, then you've got all your grains. Above that, you're going to have all your leafy vegetables, things that grow above the soil, and your fruits that have got natural sugar in. They're going to come above that line. So if you'd really binged out on loads and loads of fruit and you felt like you needed grounding, then you would need a healthy yang way. And a healthy yang way would be to have miso. A miso soup, you can get it in instant packets. I used to keep it at workshops because a lot of people got high as kites when we were going on the awareness journey and, you know, talking about levels of consciousness and them understanding who they really were. They'd get really, really high and they couldn't hardly drive home afterwards. So I'd always have packets of instant miso soup that you can get in even Tesco supermarkets now in little boxes, because miso is the sludge that you find at the bottom of the barrels of soy sauce when they make and ferment soy sauce in those great wooden barrels. The real soy sauce, this is the Genmais miso and the Mugi miso. They're all made with different grains and soya. Soya is the main for soy sauce, but they add rice and barley and all sorts of stuff, wheat sometimes. So there's different names for miso, but it's a sludge at the bottom of the barrel. So they drain off the soy sauce, and the soy sauce is the tamari, the shoyu, the real Japanese soy sauce that has the real fermented goodness of soya beans. And then the sludge at the bottom is miso. And you can put it in casseroles, or you can just put it in a cup and have it as a soup with hot water boiled on it. In these little packets, it has little pieces of dried seaweed, so it gives you added goodness. And it's a great idea if you get into making a big pot, of, especially in the winter, of miso soup and having it every day. The Chinese eat the, and the Japanese, I think, as well. I think both of them eat the miso soup. I think Japanese have it every day for breakfast. And it's wonderful. It's so good for your digestive system. It's healing if you've got anything wrong with your digestive system, and it balances it. But it's a really natural way of yanging down if you've over-yinned. And certainly if you've eaten loads of cakes or sweets, or you've drunk a lot of alcohol. Because at the top of the yin chart, we've got the sugar. We've got drugs as well. Recreational drugs and medicinal drugs are all extreme yin. And sugar, refined sugar, extreme yin. Underneath that, you're going to have things like honey and agave syrup, but that's healthier, and maple syrup. They're healthier. They're not as yin because they're natural, and they're in a full format. They haven't had the active ingredients taken out and all the periphery ingredients destroyed like in refined sugar. So they're less yin, but they're still very yin, those sweetened, naturally sweet things. But they're a much healthier way for your body to have a sweet thing. And if you want to make your own lovely raw chocolate and get all the antioxidants and all the healing attributes that raw cacao, cold-pressed cacao has, then sweeten it with agave, which comes from the cactus plant, and also with honey, which is lovely and natural. But don't put too much in, just a little bit to sweeten it, but it's much better than the refined. So as we come down, we're then going into the fruits, which have the natural sugar. Then you've got dairy, which is more yin than the leafy vegetables. Okay, it's got a different consistency, and it's also it's coming down to that line of the balance, which is grain. So a lot of your diet can be grains, healthy grains like rice. Rice is much, much healthier than wheat. Wheat has been so bred, overbred now, that a lot of people have a sensitivity to it. Even those who are not totally gluten-free, who are not celiacs as such, who've been diagnosed, a lot of people bloat with too much wheat and don't even realize why it's happening. So if you're somebody who has a lot of bloated stomach going on, then have a look at not actually eating so much wheat. So yin and yang. So we're dealing with moods of food here. We're not only dealing with acid and alkaline and keeping it healthy and live. We're dealing with live. Then we're dealing with a balance of acid and alkaline. But we're actually dealing with moods. Because if you're yang and you eat lots of red meat, you're going to be very heavy. If you're depressed, do not eat meat. If you are depressed, do not eat eggs. Eggs are one of the yangest foods after meat. They come right low down in that yang chart. Because the egg holds the whole of the life, doesn't it? The whole of the meat of the chicken, if you like. So when you boil an egg, you know how solid an egg is. And even when you fry an egg, there's a solid material there. It's very yang. And if you are feeling slightly down, do not eat even one egg. Because it doesn't do you any good. It's very hard to get up and actually get creative if you felt like mediocre and you eat an egg. And if you start to understand the moods that foods create, I've actually, if you want to see the whole of it talked of in a fairly short article, go to the our network at www.universallyaware.ning.com, and down the center pages you'll see all sorts of links to my hub pages. And I don't know whether the link for the actual foods change your mood, I think I called it. But it may not be logged there, but all you've got to do is go to any one of those hubs that are linked there and then go to the profile and you'll be able to find it, because I've got something like 48 articles, hubs, written about all sorts of different subjects over the last couple of years there. And one of them is the yin and yang on foods change our mood or something like that. And you'll see how important it is to understand the yin and yang of food as well as the alkaline and the acid. Meat is very acid. Drugs, alcohol is very acid. Eating lots of citrus fruits would be very acid eventually as well. And there's a lot of things there. Dairy is quite acid, you know. And then strange things like putting lemon in your water and drinking that will actually make your system alkaline, because even though the lemon juice is acid, when it enters your system, it turns to alkaline. You need to know things like that as well. And then you will be able to be more responsible for who you are, what health you're in, whether you can totally unplug from the matrix on the health side. And so we're looking at unplugging on the law side, which isn't law because it's just legal. So we're unplugging from the legal side of the matrix. We're going by common law, which is do no man any harm and do not harm other people's property. That's basically common law. And everything else, we're sovereign people. We should be free. And we're unplugging corporate power in our bills, where the money's weighted on us by parking fines, speeding fines, when we're going by our own common sense. And we're not allowed to. So we're fined for doing 42 miles or 44 miles in certain areas when we should, by law, they say, be doing, or by the legal, be doing 40. There are many things that we can unplug from. And have a look and see how much are you plugged in to the belief system that you don't even know and you haven't looked at and researched to see whether it's the real truth. So check out which plugs you've still got plugged in. Many different areas. I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously religion is another one you could be plugged into. You could be plugged into your own sort of religion, you know, your own ideas of it. And I think it's, to me right now, it's all up for grabs, you know. I'm waiting for the day when more and more of the curtains come down and we just look at what we are, who we are. Something I've been a bit engrossed in. I don't know whether I can get hold of it here from where I'm, whether I've got a long enough lead. But because I was left without the internet for 10 days, and I certainly don't have a television, I was picking up books to relax with. And one of them, because my books have just all recently come into this new house and are in two different rooms on two different floors, I had a small bookcase that I was able to fit into my living room on the middle floor. And the books went in there at random because me and my daughter were trying to unpack boxes so that the removal men could bring in more boxes, because we couldn't actually get them all in the spare room. So we were quickly throwing these books into a bookcase at random. And it was interesting, the books I found on the little bookcase just where my hand could reach when I was relaxing. And one of them was the Sacred Tibetan Teachings on Death and Liberation. And that is a bit mind-blowing if you've never looked at that, because it's about, you know, I remember years ago, it's funny how things happen to you and it's all by synchronicity. When I was working the windmill, and I spent 4 years there as the miller under all sorts of controversy because they were trying to evict me, I met a man who used to come in for a cup of tea, young man, and we got very friendly and used to like talking to one another. So he'd pop in from time to time, maybe every couple of months. And he was always talking about the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And he ended up buying me a book just before I left. And it was a lovely little book. And it was about part of the understanding of the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the Egyptian Book of the Dead about the sun and moon cycles as well. And I'm not saying I understand this, but what is fascinating about it is it's about the moment of death, okay? Now, when you think about what's happening now within the cycle that's ending, and people are talking about ascension, and there's been a lot of interesting information come through. The woman, is it Ashaya Dean? I may have that name slightly wrong. I can't remember it exactly. But she did amazing videos on incredibly deep, quite often logical information about how the universe really works and what the illusion is of some people who are thinking that ascension is something which it isn't, and that they are going to go for the visions that they see and they will follow them. And something she said is there are false areas and false gates, false portals almost. You'd have to look at her material to see what I'm talking about there. But it resonated with me that she was talking the truth. Now, somebody else who deals with this information as well is the Green Essene Group. And I think if you Google that, you'll see their information. I get regular emails from them. I'll have to start putting them on the network. But they also have tried to, they were selling loads of information. I never ever bought it because I thought it was too expensive. I actually did ask them if they'd like to swap with my manuscript, and they never went for that. I said, I'll give you the powerful wisdom that I've been given by my mentors, and then perhaps we can swap, but they wouldn't do it because they were on a bit of a commercial act going on there at the time. But I was interested to read more. But now, because we're nearly at the end of 2012, they give a lot of the information away free, and I've certainly received some of it. And it's similar to Ashaya Dean, where they're saying there is an illusion here. There is a choice at that point where people think they're going to just ascend. Is they could be ascending into the wrong portal, into the wrong gates, the illusionary gates. There is a trick, and you could be taken in. I don't know whether anybody else has heard of this, but I certainly resonated with the Green Essene material. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked for the manuscript. But the interesting thing for me here is, in a synchronized way, I just reached my hand into the bookcase, and I can't even remember where this particular version of the sacred Tibetan teachings came from. It's a secondhand book. I obviously picked it up somewhere, and it talks about that moment. Now, this isn't talking about ascension, but in another way it is. The Tibetan sacred teachings, which come out of those monasteries where that information has been hidden for years and now isn't even widely available because of how the Chinese have dealt with Tibet. But anyway, the information is that there is a choice. And when you see the visions and the lights and the amazing etheric sounds at the point of death, when the organs have given up and the last breath is taken, then those visions come in from the mind, and that is not the path. In their sacred teachings, that is not the path to take. There is a all pure awareness space, which is who we really are. And the illusion is going towards. I found this really interesting. And I am going to study up and get some more information together and ask my mentors about this, because they've talked about the point of ascension and how that comes about. And anybody who's received my manuscript will see that. I'll talk a little bit more in a moment as to where you can get that book from now, because it is in paperback form. But it goes along for me with the fact that a lot of people will follow their own visions of sound, like they do in their visualizations that they do, and call it meditation. That's all an illusion as well. It isn't meditation. It's just a visualization. Meditation is something much, much more poignant, spot inside of you of timelessness. And you only get that when you get control of the lower mind, which I've talked about a lot, and I won't go on anymore tonight. I've only got 11 minutes left here. But with this, it's the choice between going again. This is how important this is, because at the end of the cycle, I believe what we go into is a choice, but without the dying. So this is similar. This is why you need to know the sacred Tibetan knowledge. When there's a choice and you don't have to die and go on the wheel of rebirth. Anybody who relates to this, I've related to this for years. I've said to people, we don't have to die this time. I know we don't. Now, dying is dying and going round the wheel of rebirth again. Right? Ascending is not. Ascending is not going round that wheel, not being reborn on another earth, going through 3D misery, pain, and all of that, duality again. So if you want to get off the wheel of rebirth, you know, check out some of these people who know the truth about this and what ascension really is. But at that point, according to the Tibetans, there is the illusion that could take over. And what it is a projection from your own mind. And you have to be able to ignore that. It's called the moment of bardo. And what it is the difference between samsara, which is the illusion, the wheel of rebirth, coming back into this reality full of illusions. None of it is real. Or going to the real point and becoming real again in the real sense of who we truly are. That energy, that vibration, that whole purity of essence. And it's just synchronized for me that somehow, and I thought, goodness, why am I sitting here reading this? Because it just came to hand. And I realized why, because I've always had that resonance with the Greener Scenes material who have been trying to tell people, get people to read their material that they said was hidden knowledge that they came across through old manuscripts that were passed down a certain line of people. Is how they presented it. Ashaya Dean has given all of hers through channeling. And it's very deep, complex material. But it's also saying a similar thing. That at this point, at the end of this cycle, and at the point of death, as the Tibetans say, there is a choice. And you've got to be able to choose the right thing. I've also seen it on a video. I'm trying to think who did the video. It's not the Australian guy. Can't remember his name right off, but you'll know who I mean. The guy who's done a lot of stuff about, he talks about how he has been everywhere. He's been up to all the different levels of the universe and all of that. He has a bit of an ego going on there at the time as well, but he has some interesting information. But I'm not sure he talks about this, so it's not him. But there is another guy who I know. He did it. By staging it, he had I remember on the video, he was standing on the ground with just people listening to him in the audience. And then he staged it as if this light is going to come at you, from the left or the right. I can't remember which he said it is. He said, and it's going to feel like you want to follow it, but it's going to be an illusionary light. And this is exactly what they say in the Tibetan sacred teachings, which is really the Tibetan Book of the Dead translated, and it talks about that moment. I hadn't realized till I looked at this. I know this guy used to come and talk to me about this all the time, but this is going back 10 years ago now, and I wasn't really keying into what he was saying and why it was so important, because I wasn't interested in dying right there and then. But now we know that we're actually at the end of a cycle, and it's a different death, it's a different thing, it's a kind of choice. And when we get to the end of the cycle, from what I understand it, because of the rays of energy on the planet, you know, there's going to be a moment where the energy will raise so high, and that's when you get the choice come in. And whether you'd call that death and life, I don't know. It's a completely different thing than dying in a through an illness or through a car accident or through whatever. The end of a cycle is a different time. It's our evolutionary moment. So I think a lot of this is really interesting. I certainly haven't gone any further than that, but I'm just telling you my own experiences with it. Hearing the information from Ashaya Dean, hearing it from Greener Scenes, really resonating with it, and that there is something there. And then reading it in the Tibetan Book of the Dead on the normal death, and knowing there's some link here in that this is true, because your mind, after the moment of physical death, your mind is still there. right? Connected to your essence. And there is a brief moment, and the Tibetan Book of the Dead definitely goes into all the signs and the situations you go through, and then it lasts, like with the mental still being there, connected to the essence, making its decision, lasts maybe a few days. So you get the choice, and it's all to do with how much you've learned, how much you know in this life as to whether you're going to go for the illusion or not, or whether you're even going to be attracted to not even have that choice, and you're going to be attracted to all the emotional scenarios and the attachment and the duality and the emotional needs and all of that, because that'll not even give you the choice of the real light or the other light. It'll just give you the choice of going straight back into samsara, which is the illusion and the wheel of rebirth, and back again you'll come. And as we know, at the end of this cycle, the Earth's not going to be in a particularly great state because she's going to go through all the Earth changes. So if you end up on the same Earth planet, it will certainly be pretty dilapidated at that point to go around the wheel of rebirth. So this is something that you seriously need to begin to comprehend. What are we talking about here? Who are you? Where is your energy at? What are you capable of? Can you teach yourself to know the difference between illusion every day that's happening around you? Because that's your training ground to know at that moment when we change into the beginning of the next cycle as to which way you're going to go and whether you're going to end up in the higher echelons of the light and in the real reality of non-duality, of pureness of spirit, and coming from the oneness and joining with the oneness, or whether you're going to end up on another trip around the wheel of rebirth. And on that note, I'm going to play us out, I think. That's a really serious note, isn't it? And I hadn't planned any of this. I didn't even plan to talk about that. I'm just talking about what comes into my mind. But one thing I will just give you here is, if you want to get a copy of the book that I was mentored through for, and all the information I have on what is happening right now, which is a lot of information and it's very pure, is in the Book of Secrets, which is the Event Horizon One and All, subtitle there. And it's available on Amazon.com under my name, Linda Jocelyn. It's also available on Amazon.co.uk. It's available on Barnes & Noble book site now. But if you go to www.universallyaware.ning.com, our network, you'll see the link to it on the right-hand side of the page as you scroll down on the front page. And you'll see a picture of the cover. You'll be able to go to that link, which takes you to Amazon.com, I think, or you can search it on those. But it is really valuable information, and it is certainly seeing me through giving me insider information on what's truly going on for us and the things we need to do to clean up our acts. And on that note, I'm going to play us out with Miss Magical Alienations. And you can check her out on Facebook. It's Miss Magical with a K. And she's on live stream and has her own shows there. Namaste.
Bring it on. Bring it on to me. Bring it on to me. Anything. Bring it down. Bring it down to me. Bring it down to me. I'm so ready for everything. Damn.